Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Abundant Solutions Hour. Our goal is to help others be more, do more, and have more. I'm your host, Gregory Turner.
And I'm your co-host, Brian J. Henderson.
Brian, I got a lot of emails from people today concerning tonight's show.
Yes, yes.
Everybody wants to know who the lady in red is. I'm sure, Brian, they know who she is, but everybody wants to hear what she's got to say tonight. And not only her, our other guest as well. So, Brian, you know what? We have two great authors on tonight. And, Brian, I guarantee you along the way with them pursuing their dreams and their goals and growing up as women, as, you know, as kids, and they're growing up into this beautiful women that they are, I guarantee you, Brian, along the way, somebody told them that they couldn't do it. Somebody threw them away, and now look at them.
Absolutely.
I guarantee you. I guarantee you it happened, Brian.
Yes. You know, a lot of times when people start doubting what you can do, you know, it's just amazing how your abilities just come out and shine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost indescribable how you can pull from within. And, you know, and tonight's title is called Inner Strength.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how you can pull from within and pull yourself out of that situation or pull from within to create a new person or create the person that you were supposed to be. Because a lot of people don't know who they are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. They don't really know who they are. So when people doubt you, when you have those naysayers and those, what I call those sideline folks, that they always on the sideline, but when it's time to get in the game, all they ever do is fumble. you know, it's like when you see all those sideline folks, don't pay attention to them. Just use that energy and turn it around. You know, take that energy that they're putting out there to down you and belittle you and whatever, bring it back and use it.
Well, I tell you what, Brian, I can guarantee you that if our authors look back over their lives and the people that were in their lives or the negative people that came against them and said, you know what, you can't do this. And, Brian, you know what, a lot of times it's the little things that stop us from reaching our breakthrough. It's the little things, that little thing called belief, that little thing called the mind and how we think and how we react to certain life issues that come against us. We're right there at the breakthrough. And I guarantee you, Brian, once these women finish writing that book, I bet they did a big relief. I bet it was a big sigh, Brian. I bet it was a big relief that they gave out. And then I guarantee you, Brian, they probably said, is this it? Is this all I had to do was to stay with it and not listen to others and fight that I would get here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a sad thing when you're trying to reach your dreams and your goals and you have people coming against you. And, Brian, you know what that's like. We all know what that's like. It's a hurting thing, but we allow someone else's opinion to dictate our future. And tonight we have two beautiful, powerful women. And if you're listening to the show, you better remember these names as we go along because you're going to see them in New York. I think one is already in New York. You're going to see these names in lights. Their platform is growing. And, Brian, I'm just excited about the guests that we have on tonight.
Absolutely. You know, Greg, there's one thing, one little thing that you didn't mention, and I think when everybody hears me and what I say about this one little thing that will always get you behind or always get you tossed up, I think they'll definitely agree. That little thing called your tongue.
Yes.
It's the words that you say and the things that come out of your mouth that determine whether you're going to make it or you're going to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
And if people can learn to just hold that tongue. Sometimes it's best to keep your mouth shut and listen.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things. I was working with the youth group this weekend, and I was teaching them about listening. I said, how come everything you have, say, how many people hear people say, listen, just wait a minute and listen,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so when the kids are like, people tell me that all the time. I said, why do you think they tell you that? Because I'll never be listening. Like, yeah, and what if you're not listening, what are you usually doing? Talking. You see? And so it's that tongue that gets us in such a big rut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we learn how to say the right things the right way, you know, even when you're telling somebody, you know, what they should hear or what they're supposed to hear, and it may not be the fun thing to do, that tongue, you have to learn how to say certain things. You know, I've learned how to sometimes tell people not to talk without saying, shut up. Because, see, that word sounds like you want to fight. But if you say, could you hold on just a second?
Yeah.
You know, something like that, they'll say, oh, sure, I can hold on for a second.
Hmm.
You know, but if you say, shut up. Hey, you, shut up. See how different those two things sound?
Yeah.
Could you hold on just a second? Shut up. So it's the way we talk. But, you know, tonight we got two awesome women, and, you know, I'm just ready to listen to what they have to say.
Go ahead and bring them in, Brian. Just go ahead and bring them in.
We have on the call with us author Sherry Lewis and Linda Dominique Grossenver. And I want to hope I'm saying her name right. She's probably going to kill me on that. But I want to introduce them all to you tonight. Sherry Lewis is the author. She has actually another book out now, but she's the author of a book called, where is it? I just lost my connection here, Greg. All right. Her second book is called Dancing into Destiny. And I'm going to bring her onto the call right now as I can
see.
All right.
Okay, yeah, bring
Sherry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I apologize for my just botched introduction, but
that's all right.
Having some technical
absolutely
things
all right.
Here.
It's okay.
Yeah,
and
we'd
like
missing.
To welcome you.
Thank
yeah,
you. It's great to be back with you guys.
Yeah, we've missed you.
Yeah.
We've been following you, don't worry. We've been following you now with this other big thing that you have out there called Dance into Destiny.
Yeah, me and my thick books, right?
Yeah, and you're doing a wonderful job, and you're being blessed by it. I tell you what, you heard us dialoguing a few minutes ago
mm-hmm.
about you coming up and growing up, and you know, we all had to struggle with something. We all had to deal with someone saying we can't do this or we can't do that. And when you finished writing your first book, your very first book, what was that like?
Oh, it was just pure bliss. I mean, it just was the most exciting thing in the world. It's really difficult to sit down and write an entire book. I've met so many people that are like, oh, yeah, I'm writing a book. But to actually get to the end of it and be finished with it is a huge, huge thing. So it's just, it's an amazing feeling to write the end and be like, wow, I finished the story. So
yeah.
Awesome feeling.
I was talking with one of my friends before the show, and she's working on a book, and she's on the last chapter, but she said that she feels like she's stuck. She's right
okay.
there at it. She never thought she would write a book. She's right there at it. But it seems like the words are not coming anymore. And I told her to just stick with it. They'll come. You didn't come this far to just get stuck right there where you are. Did you have
Absolutely.
Any problems like, well, from chapter to chapter, you couldn't figure out how you wanted to end it or how you wanted to bring other parts in?
Oh, of course. I mean, sometimes you just get stuck and you just have to back away from it for a second and be like, okay, I don't know where I'm going with this. I got to figure this out. But somehow the characters, at least when I write, the characters just come through and they say, well, this is what we want to do. This is how we end it. And so I just let the characters guide me as to how they want their story to end. But, yeah, there are definitely stuck points that you get to.
Okay. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, Brian. I'm going to let you ask a question because I'll talk to Sherry all night.
Okay.
You know, the one thing that was intriguing about what you do is, you know, aside from what you do with your books, is
mm-hmm.
that you work with people. Tell us,
mm-hmm.
what type of people do you work with?
Well, my day job is as a physician in a women's prison. So, I mean, I think people have all sorts of thoughts about what prisoners are like, as I did when I first started working there. But what I've learned is they're real people, normal people that have gone through some rough times and hard times in their life. So it's been a very enriching experience to work in a women's prison.
Yes, you know, and Greg and I actually go into the prisons and the detention centers, and we talk to a lot of the people there, including a lot of youth. And, you know, the one thing that we've learned, and it's exactly right what you said, they're real people who have real problems, real issues that they're dealing with in a real way. And so to have someone like you who's definitely, I'm sure, an inspiration to many of them, you know, what was it like when you told them that you wrote a book? How did they respond?
Oh, they're so excited. I mean, they're just like some of my best supporters. They, you know, they can't always get the book, so I always bring in a stack of books and put them in their libraries there, and they read them, and they want to come talk to me about them. And this weekend, this Saturday, I was in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution just being featured for making the Essence bestseller list with my two other writer friends. And when I got to work this morning, it just was an uproar. I mean, they had all gotten the paper over the weekend, and they had it on their dorm ranges, and everybody was reading it and passing it around, and they're just so excited and so supportive, and they're like, oh, strong black woman. I think for a lot of them, I just represent their dreams and represent what it's like to be successful. So they're very supportive and very excited about it.
When you walked in this morning, what did you think when they gave you that type of reception when you came in and everybody was just so happy for you?
It totally warmed my heart. It felt so good. It was so sweet. Just always their responses toward me are so good. Whenever they sneak back to my office unauthorized and risking getting locked down just to tell me, oh, I loved your book. Can you answer this question, or can you help me write this, or can you look at this? It's very rewarding. It's a really, really good feeling.
You know, I want to ask you about Kiva Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the world did you get her from?
Where did I get her from? Deep
yeah.
down on the inside of me, actually. She's a mixture of me and one of my best friends.
I was going to ask that. I'm not going to ask you too much about Kiva. I don't want to give her away.
Okay.
I did want you to touch a little bit on your book.
Okay. Yeah, Kiva Banks is a black Atlanta princess. I mean, she's a total socialite, drives a BMW, looks great, fancy clothes, fancy everything, rich, grew up privileged, yeah, father's a senator. And she just has what looks like a great life. But on the inside, she's depressed and empty because she's not doing what she wants to do. She's not pursuing her dreams. She's not being true to herself. And she's basically put away her dreams to pursue what her parents thought she should do and what society says is an acceptable thing to do. And so she's miserable. She's living without purpose, with no sense of destiny. And to me, she just exemplifies so many people in the world who are living what would be considered the American dream, but not necessarily their dream, and therefore they're completely and totally miserable. So,
you know what? I think you I think you just named and pointed out probably 90% of the people in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
very unfortunate. But
yes. But when you, it's called our calling. A lot of people want to know why we were created, and what is this thing that we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then you see someone like a Tyler Perry or a Sherry Lewis doing their thing and loving it.
Wow, putting me in the same category as Tyler Perry. That's great. Thank you.
you belong up there.
Wow, thank you.
And you know what? The sad thing about it, you know it. you know you belong up there. You know that there's something special about you. You know, deep down inside, you know that. It's not bragging or boasting, but you know that you have that favor, and you know who you belong to.
You have to know those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the only thing that gets you where you're supposed to go is believing that you're supposed to be there. That's very true.
Yes, and now that you're there, doing the things that you want to do. Now, that job that you have at the correction facility,
mm-hmm.
that's going to have to pass because what you're doing right now is going to take over all of that. So I'm speaking
well,
that
I
in.
Just
so,
receive that in the name of Jesus.
Yeah,
I receive
yeah,
it. Thank you.
because you're going to be doing so many different things, and
yeah.
to just, if you can't see that, you won't get there. So,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I know you see that, and I know I'm bothering you and pulling things out of you, but when you get there,
mm-hmm.
when you're faced with making that decision, okay, do I walk away? Do I stay at this job? It's comfortable, but do I walk away and not know what's coming around the corner, but I know it's great, but what do I do when you're at that crossroad of your dreams and your goals and you know that something else higher is tugging at you to let something else go?
You are being completely and totally prophetic. That is my life right now. Yeah, it's all about living your dreams, though, and it's you know, that's what I try to do with Kiva in the book, and what I'm trying to do with my own life is develop an intimate relationship with God and just be in His face every day, like, who am I? What am I supposed to do? Who am I? What am I called to do? And just really get the mind of God for my life. And then I always, whenever I sign the book, Dance into Destiny, I always sign it, Pursue Purpose and Destiny with Passion. Mm-hmm. Because to me, once you figure out what it's supposed to be, you got to go after it with everything that you are and everything that you've got on the inside, because that's the only way to get there. So.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, it's a beautiful thing. But go ahead, Brian.
I was just thinking, you know, what she talked about with the character, it's just amazing because as she described that character, about 7 or 8 people that I know personally, their images just pop right in my head, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
She's describing so many people that I know that have lots of nice things, and they still aren't happy. You know,
yeah.
And that's wow. You know,
yeah.
I think
that means
the book just speaks so much to the lives of people in general.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Brian, they need to get the book. They can go on sherrylewis.com to buy it. They need to buy this book. Brian, I think our other guest just popped in.
All right, let's check. You're listening to the Abundant Solutions Hour. Is this you, Linda? Linda?
Probably as a guest.
All right.
But we'll get back to her. But, Brian,
come
you can go ahead
Linda,
with it.
Call us now.
But go ahead, Brian. I know you had another question for Sherry. Go ahead.
But, you know, it's amazing how so many people live that lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, and they have lots of money. You know, a lot of times money isn't even an issue with them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have everything that people, quote-unquote people, say you need to have, and yet they're absolutely miserable within.
Exactly. And that's no way to live life. That's not the way God designed us. That's not the way He created us. That's not what He wants for us. It's not His best for us. And I'm coming to the place that I believe that when you do pursue purpose and destiny with all your heart, and when you get to that place where you're doing what exactly God called you to do and designed and created you to do, that's where provision comes. That's where you can count on the fact that you're going to be well taken care of and have abundantly above all you can ask or think. You know, I mean, it makes sense to me that He would provide for the vision that He's placed on the inside of us.
Yeah. I tell you what, you know, when we were talking about this new book that you have, did you kind of piggyback off of the other book, the first book that you read?
No, they're completely, totally separate stories. In fact, I actually wrote Dance into Destiny first. It was my first book, and sold My Soul Cries Out first. And so... Mm-hmm. But they're completely unrelated, and they're completely different types of stories. Sometimes people read My Soul Cries Out, and then they pick up Dance into Destiny expecting it to be the same feel, and it's completely different. My Soul Cries Out is really fast. It's really deeply emotional. It's very controversial, taboo. And this is more of a sweet young adult story. It's a great friendship story, intimacy story, and then a love story in it as well. But it's a completely, completely different book, completely different feel to it.
Mm. Because the first book, My Soul Cries Out, that book there, I think a lot of people, a lot of friends, well, I got some emails about that book today, and everybody was asking me about the new book that's out, and I said, well, I can't really tell you a lot about it. You just have to go out and buy it yourself.
Okay.
They did promise me that they were going to read it, and they do follow you.
Okay,
I don't know if
great.
You know that, but you have people that are following you. And they really love seeing stories like yours. They love seeing people like you and Linda from the beginning writing your books, and they can follow you and just see that the greatness that was happening in you, because the courage that you have to do what you're doing is really helping and pulling somebody else with you, whether
wow,
you know it or
awesome.
Not.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so,
good to know.
Yes. You have a lot of people that are following you saying, you know what, if Sherry wrote a book, I can write a book.
Awesome.
I think
and we actually do have a writing group that we that me and several other authors, we mentor people in writing, and so that's been good to try to help other people get to where I am and beyond. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to make it big, but I'm trying to bring other people along with me as well.
You're already big, Sherry. You're already big. It's just a matter of time for that platform to just expand, and you know it's going to happen.
I receive that. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, just listening to her and just reading about her story, it just, to me, it's inspiring because, you know, she's a physician, she's working, she's doing something that's helping people, she's serving people, and at the same time, she finds time to do something that really brings her joy.
Yeah.
You know, because most people, when they're doing something that, because I assume you enjoy working with the inmates and so forth, with the people that are incarcerated.
It's very rewarding. It's hard work. It's stressful work. It can burn out. But like I said, there are some moments that there's so much joy that I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, and I know that God has me there, and it's where I'm supposed to be. Yeah, definitely.
Yes, you know, and so I guess my question is this. What was your motivation for writing the books that you've written so far?
It's funny. When people ask me that, I wish I could say something deep and wonderful, but I think my books are simply therapy. They're just therapy for me, and it's cheaper than a shrink, and I can actually make money off of it. So when I wrote Dance into Destiny, I was struggling with finding out who I was and what I was called to do and being unfulfilled. And so it was literally therapy for me to just get some things out. You know, I used to write in a journal when I was young, the whole time growing up. And so this was kind of me journaling, but through characters. And so this was kind of an extension of that. And then my soul cries out, as I've said many times, you know, everybody asks, did that happen to you? And I'm like, no, I'm not in prison. I work at a prison. If that had happened to me, I think I'd be in prison. But it was me being a Christian woman going through a divorce. And so once again, it was therapy. It was, how do I process this horrible, horrible, horrible thing that's going on in my life right now and try to find God in it and try to find some joy in it and try to grow out of it. So thus far, all my books that I've written have been therapy. I wish I could say that God visits me in the night and gives me a vision and da-da, I write a book, but no, it's purely therapy.
And wouldn't it be a great thing is that every time somebody had to have some sort of therapy that they could just write something that could also,
yeah,
in turn, help people. You know, so many people turn to drugs, so many people turn to alcohol, so many people turn to sex. I mean, all these different things they turn to, when
yeah,
the easiest thing they could do is turn to within and pull something out of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
And I think that's the most rewarding thing about it, is that in the midst of my pain and struggles and some of the worst things in my life, I can write something that's actually a blessing to somebody else. So my pain turns into somebody else's blessings. I've had so many people to write me and say, you know, speaking of My Soul Cries Out, that this happened to me, or not exactly this happened to me, but I'm going through a divorce, or I went through this pain and it really helped me. And even some of my prisoners saying to me, I read Dance into Destiny and it made me think about my destiny. I mean, for someone to be standing in front of me in a brown suit that says prisoner of the state or state prisoner, and for them to think about their destiny and to think about who they're called to be and what they're called to do and getting out of jail and changing their life and chasing after God, that's amazing to me. And the fact that I was going through a bad thing and it turned into something amazing that could change somebody's life, that's the best thing in the world. That's just great to me. It's just like, thank
you,
God, for that opportunity.
Yes, you know, it all starts with you being transparent with your life. You're allowing somebody else to come in.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times with those, I call them life experiences, and it's a hurting thing when you lose someone or you're going through a divorce or you just went through some bad times. I call those life experiences because that's where your character is being built anyway.
Absolutely.
So when something like that happens and you've gone through some things, now that you're out of it, you know, we can't be so high and mighty and thumb our nose at other people because they're going through that. But,
absolutely,
you know, when we see someone going through that hurt and that pain, we recognize it. So we should go to them and say, you know what, I've been there. This is what you could do to come out of it.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, yeah, and I believe that that's why we go through a lot of those things so that our bad things could be a solution for someone else.
Absolutely. One of my favorite teachers teaches, one of his favorite sayings is, don't waste your trials. And I fully believe that. Why should I waste it? If I go through something, then let's make something good come out of it. Let it be a blessing to someone else in some kind of way. And it's funny because sometimes people ask me, how do you just put all your business on the street? And if I'm ministering, if I'm teaching, if I'm sharing, I always do that. I rip my heart open and just show whatever's there because I think that's what really ministers to somebody is seeing someone's pain and seeing their ability to overcome and to get through it. It's just like you said, it's like, well, I can do that too. I can make it through it too. So, you know, there's no sense in being embarrassed about being divorced. It happened. And so if I can minister to somebody else and help them keep their marriage or help them get through divorce, then amen. At least my pain was worth something.
Yes. And, you know, if you look at the great ones out there, I'll just throw two names, but, I mean, we can all pull a lot of different names, but these people were transparent. You have Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry. I'll just use those two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can use another one. We could use Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at the things that happened in their life that they shared with the world.
Yeah.
You know, when we hold those things in, it's not doing us any good.
None whatsoever, and not doing them any good either.
Right. Those things happen to you that because now you're qualified to help someone else. Because when you go into the prisons and you're talking about certain issues with the prisoners, they know if you went through that or not.
Yeah.
They can tell.
And there's certain things I can't tell them about. I've never used drugs. Right. I've never been abused. I've never, you know. And sometimes I think just pain is pain, you know, and sometimes if they see, well, you've been through something, it might not have been what I went through, but still, you know, you've known some pain in your life. I think it helps to know that we're all living the human experience, and whatever happens to us, we can overcome. We can get through
it. You know, I think that's the most important part, what you said about pain is pain, because, you know, everybody's experience is not going to be exactly cookie cutter the same. You know,
yeah.
You might experience a loss. I might experience a loss. It might be the same person that we lost, but we're going to experience that differently.
Very true.
And
very
so
true.
The simple fact that they can look at you and say, you experienced pain and I experienced pain, so you know what pain feels like. So now I can relate to you and you can relate to me. I think that's what's so important, and that's what I believe your book does. It gives them somebody that they can relate themselves to. You know, if they've been through that situation, if they've been through that hurt or that type of pain, they say, wow, I went through this. The character in the book is going through this. And they become that character in a sense.
And they see the character come through it, of course, because there's going to be a happy ending. And so
exactly.
I pray that it just gives people hope that they can come through things as well.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it will. But you know what? A lot of times, Sherry, I've been on this earth long enough to know a lot of times, a lot of the people that you touch, you'll never know. Because he's not going to share his glory with you, me, or anybody else.
That's very
he's not going to do that. So,
that's very true.
You know, just keep doing what you're doing. And I think a lot of times people get lost in the mix by saying, what I do, it don't matter. Yes, it does. It matters. You never know who's listening.
That's
you never
true.
Know what a person is going through. When you're walking in a grocery store and you say something nice to someone, you never know what that person is on their way to do.
Yeah, that's true. You never know what difference your words make when you get when you say
and
them.
And some lady right now is listening to you, Sherry, talking about going through a divorce and going through a lot of things. And a lot of times, you know, people feel that that if they go through this divorce, the whole world is looking. It's an embarrassing thing, and I'll never make it out of this dark room that I'm in.
Yeah.
But you can tell
them. It feels different. Like that.
yeah. But you can tell them different because you went through it.
Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
And your books, just keep doing what you're doing. We're just proud of you. We're just glad to know you and be around what this great thing that's going on. I'm just glad to be a part of it, tell you the truth.
Thank you.
This is your second time on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, Brian, you know, I feel like I'm a part of what she's doing.
You know, the feeling that I get is that I'm proud of her.
Yes.
You know, because, again, she said, I wrote just for therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But then she decided to share the thing that made her feel better with everybody else, and as a result, they felt better. And you see, if you look at the reciprocal effort, she gives, and then she receives. And then she gives, and then she receives, and then she gives, and then she receives. And it's just that reciprocal effort. So what I'll say to that is just keep giving us these books.
Okay.
Keep giving them to us.
Okay. I hope to.
You know,
definitely what I love to do, so.
So do you are you thinking about making any of your books into plays? Are you thinking about doing anything like that?
I would love to get a movie deal. I mean, I think that's every writer's dream. So, yeah, I'd love to get a movie deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been told that it would make good pictures and good movies and stuff. So who knows?
I mean, the book Dance in the Destiny just sounds like a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
I think so.
Yes, it does. It does.
I think so.
I mean, when I look at the cover, it reminds me of how Stella got her groove back. I don't know why.
Really?
That's the idea that when I first saw the cover, I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I guess because the lady kind of favors,
okay.
You know, not necessarily the book, but, you know, she kind of favors Vivica Fox.
Okay.
And it made me think about how, even though Vivica Fox wasn't in that movie, it made me think about that movie. You know, but Dance in the Destiny.
When I saw the cover, I was like, oh, my God, it's too sexy for Christian fiction.
Nah. Christian fiction is sexy, too.
Okay. Okay, that works. That works.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a great thing, and I think this thing can go anywhere that you want it to go. I really do believe that. And I just say to you, just like Ryan said, keep writing these books. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep knocking those doors down, because something big is going to happen. And you know what? I really believe that it's already happening.
Amen. I believe it.
Yeah, especially with the things that you're doing right now. You mentioned it earlier. What are some of the great things that are happening that happened to you over this summer about your book writing?
Yeah, it's just been one thing after another. I'm looking at God like, wow, okay. Like I said, me, Tiama Colors, and Kendra Norman Bellamy, two of my great writer friends, we were just featured in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is Atlanta's big newspaper, and they just did a really, really nice article on us with nice little pictures in it, so that was exciting. It was in the paper on Saturday. And then I just found out that I made the Essence Bestsellers Extended List. I was number 6 on the list for the month of August. So that was very exciting, and that was for Dance in the Destiny. My Soul Cries Out was number 8 in January. So for both of my releases to make the Essence Bestseller List was just awesome and exciting. And then most recently, I just found out that My Soul Cries Out finaled in the American Christian Fiction Writers Debut Author category, which is huge. I mean, ACFW, that organization, is about 16,000 writers, Christian fiction writers, international. I mean, people in Australia, South Africa, Canada, all over the world. And so it's just a huge, huge honor to have finaled in that contest. I mean, that's a really big deal. So that's exciting. I'm going to the conference in September, and we'll see how that comes out then. So it's just been the most recent month. It's just been all great news. I'm just excited about where things are going.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Greg, I believe that we have Linda with us now.
Linda.
And let's go ahead and bring her in.
Okay.
Linda, is that you? Linda?
I don't think so.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that's okay. Welcome to the Abundant Solutions Hour. We're sorry.
No problem.
Yes, did you have a question or comment for Sherry?
Sure. Hi, Sherry. This is Martin. How you doing?
Hey, Martin. How are you?
Good. The future of Christian fiction. Do you think that it's going to be similar to what's happening in Christian music or gospel music? Because as you guys deal with more and more secular issues, whether it be child abuse or rape or any kind of trauma that happens is not, you know, not just Christians, but everybody, mm-hmm. where's the line of Christian fiction sort of separate itself from just regular urban fiction?
That's a great question. We have that discussion often, which is what is Christian fiction? Because there's a lot of books out there that are either, you call them church lit or Christian friction, where it's not necessarily Christian fiction in that I believe Christian fiction is always redemptive. It always has a message that leads back to the heart of God. It's from the Word of God. And there's a lot of books out there that are just church drama, you know, the pastor sleeping with everybody, getting everybody pregnant, all that kind of stuff. You know, a lot of those authors don't even consider themselves Christian fiction authors. So I think we'll see more of that, but I think we'll continue to see people that write stories that are redemptive, that in the end God is glorified, that His purpose and His will is done, and that there's a strong message of faith that shows that that doing things God's way and living according to the Word of God is what's going to get somebody through something. So I think it'll continue to expand. Christian fiction is really hot right now, and there's a lot of publishing companies that are opening up imprints or opening up their doors to write Christian fiction and even asking for more African-American Christian fiction. So I'm really optimistic and faithful about where it's going.
Now, that term Christian fiction, mm-hmm. was that a deism? Is that something
Steve Stewart? the term Christian friction, you mean, with the R in it?
Yes,
I can't remember who coined that to begin with. I can't remember who was the first.
Like
it definitely sounds like something D would say, right?
Yes, definitely. Most definitely. My next question is more personal. What do you think that it would require to help other women and young girls to pick up the pen and start writing their stories as a way? I have a strong belief that literacy heals. And so what do you think that would take to inspire more younger writers to come in?
That's a great statement, literacy heals, because as I just said, that's definitely what it's been for me, is very healing. I think, as they were saying, I think as they see more examples of people writing, some of the best things that's happened, that since I've been in the prison, I've had one inmate who doesn't even have her GED, never graduated from high school, has written an entire manuscript. And it was just reading my book and seeing that somebody that she sits and talks to, that listens to her chest and prescribes cold medicine, has written a book, and it's published books. It inspired her to write. And they've started a writing class where they bring in a writer from the outside to teach them. And so many of the women have just started writing. Some are just journaling and doing things. But I think just continuing to see examples of successful writers and people encouraging them that you can write as well. I love that, though. Writing is healing. That's great. I think I'm going to take that to class.
Well, and that's going to be the name of our blog, as soon as I can get Blogger to block our blog, which is shouldn't have happened, but they blocked a whole bunch of blogs on Friday.
Our
blog is called literacyhills.blogspot.com, and I want to just, you know, feature authors and people that are writing stories or have their stories told in books, and show that the way to start healing our community is to go back to the journal keeping, go back to sharing. A great playwright told me once that some of the greatest plays are stories that people didn't want to tell.
Yeah.
And I
wow.
think that's where we get our inspiration from, is, you know, stuff that we just think is so shameful and we should keep it hidden, and it comes out. But the next question is, probably for all three of you, do you think that we are oversaturated in the market of self-help as far as African-Americans?
I'll let you answer first, Sherry, because I have a very definitive answer for that.
Are we oversaturated? I don't think so, because we're not healed as a people. So I think if we were oversaturated, we'd be doing a lot better than we are. Yeah, I'd have to say that. There might be, there's a lot out, and I'm not sure whether we're reading it or what's going on, but it just seems to me if there's a lot of self-help out there, there should be a lot of people reading it, and our community should look a lot different. So I would say no.
Yes, and this is Greg Martin. You have some great questions. I would say that we don't have enough listeners and we don't have enough readers because of the same examples that are going on in the lives of people like Oprah, Tyler Perry, Sherry Lewis, people like that. Other people are repeating the same things. It's like we just don't get it until we get in a situation that we can't get out of. So with the things that Sherry is saying and teaching in her books, I think if people read what she's doing and understand why she's doing what she's doing, a lot of those people probably won't fall into some of the pitfalls that she had to go through. Now, I know a lot of things happen in our lives that we have no control over, but the things that we have control over, like the choices that we make on a daily basis, and I'm sure Sherry can help someone that's going through divorce on how to deal with it. We're never in a position that we can't do something about something. You know, sometimes we feel like there's nothing that we can do. There's always something that we can do, and we need to pull from our foundation if we have one. Now, we have, all of us have foundations. Some of them are rocky, some of them are strong, but a lot of people pull from what they think is right, and a lot of times it may not be the right foundation for them to pull from.
Now, I know I shouldn't have let Greg go before me. But I guess my answer is really towards a lot of what Greg said. What is self-help? If you break those two words down, self meaning yourself, you know, meaning something that you have to do, and help meaning aiding something. So if you are going to aid yourself, I mean, it seems to be very self-explanatory. Now, you need tools to do that. Now, there are several different types of tools out there. But the real problem is nobody really wants to use them because when they look at help, they want help from somewhere else. They don't want it from themselves because if you're in need of help, you believe that you don't have the ability to help yourself.
Uh-huh.
So is there too much self-help out there? Absolutely not. It's probably not enough. But do you really need all of that self-help? No. There's one book that I know that has all the answers in it. So, you know, really, you only really need one book. But for those who want just some augmentation to that one book or some, you know, some extra stuff, if they just want to read something that makes them feel a little bit better, you know, but if they want to get help, you know, like I said, there's only one book I know that can help them.
Well, I guess this is my final question, and it's really a sort of a personal challenge for me, is that being the son of a Black Panther and being part of the African conscious movement and at the same time understanding spirituality and not turning my back on any type of spirituality, it struck me. I saw this guy, this is a Black man that sings, oh, God, what did he sing? Not Lift Every Voice We Can Sing. Oh, God, I can't think of his name of the song. But he's real popular on Billy Graham's circuit. And he was singing a song, and he talked about it as far as slavery. And I sat there, and I was thinking, wow, from the African conscious side, I'm like, this guy looks like, you know, a Sambo or somebody that's just basically shucking and jiving for the white man. On the other side of me, which is the spirituality side, which says that, you know, if you bring anybody, whether they're white, black, yellow, green, whatever, you bring anybody to a place where they can start to have a close relationship with their creator, that's a good thing. How do you, as a Christian, like, or as Christian believers, how do you sort of reconcile the two, the African spirit, conscious, centered, that says, you know, this whole system has got to go, and it's nothing but damaging to our people, and part of that damage is our people being proselytized and converted. Then at the same time, knowing what you have seen, as Sherry brought out, in different prisoners' lives, the spirit work through them to change their life. How do you reconcile those two positions?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I consider myself a very radical Christian, and I don't believe or ascribe to a lot of the religion that has come to be a part of what I call churchianity, not Christianity, but churchianity. And so I don't think there has to be.
You got to get t-shirts. You got to make t-shirts.
Okay.
That's a second.
I don't think there is such a huge disparity between, you know, what you might call black consciousness and being a spiritual individual. That being said, my first and foremost commitment is to Jesus Christ and my relationship with him. And if being black is at any point divisive or separates me from humanity as a whole, then I have to reject that, you know, because God never intended for there to be this racism and this, you know. And a lot of black consciousness is a result of abuse and oppression, and you know, it's one thing to be conscious of who we are and to be proud and to be happy to be African American, which I'll hold up a fist every day of the week. You know what I'm saying? I wear dreads, I wear my African clothes and all that kind of stuff. But it's another thing where it becomes this anger, where it becomes against white people or against anything else because of a past history of oppression and everything else that happens. So I think the Spirit of God cries out for forgiveness and for love and for overcoming animosity between the races, and it, at the same time, celebrates our culture, celebrates our uniqueness for who we are. So I think, yes, religion was used as oppression, and it was twisted away from what God originally intended to be a device for control and for manipulation. And that I reject, but I don't feel like I have to reject my relationship with God just to reject religiosity and churchianity. So that's a heated question. I could talk about that all night.
Well, the guy that I was trying to remember, his name was Wentley Phillips, and he
Wentley
sings
Phillips,
Amazing
yeah.
Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And that story he tells about the slave ship owner writing Amazing Grace, and how the key notes for black gospel songs are old Negro spirituals are only in the black keys. I mean, that's like, it's a powerful story at the same time. It's really like, whoa. It just makes me feel from my conscious side like, yo, bro, you ain't got to tell that to these people that's sitting there like, good Negro. Yeah, I know Negro spirits.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, it's a powerful story. It's a true story. It's on point. And he's got a powerful voice. Sounds like Paul Robeson almost. But, I mean, it's just, So I found myself trying to go back and forth battling myself when I watched the video. And it's a beautiful video on YouTube. It's 10 minutes long. But
thank you so much.
I appreciate
thanks for calling, Martin. I appreciate
letting us come on and ask these questions.
Yes, thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. So, Sherry, let me ask you this. When you were answering his last question, the thing that jumped out at me, and I said, well, I'm just going to let Sherry answer his question.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is just going through my mind right now is operate in love. Always operate in love.
Yeah.
And, there's nothing more powerful than that.
Yeah.
I think at times we as people, we get impatient, and we don't let love actually take its course. But when we operate in love at all times, healing can happen.
Yeah, and that's the only way to be. I mean, because truth be told, there is a lot that happens to black people in this country. And, you know, it's easy to make the wrong choice. It's easy to get this attitude of fight the power and we hate all things white. And that's just not the heart of God. And we just have to choose love. And I think if we can think of Jesus Christ on the cross dying for sin when he didn't have to, when he hadn't done anything wrong, I think if we can get that picture in our mind, then nothing that anyone has done against us can be that great, and it can be forgiven. If he could forgive us and die for us and live that kind of love for us, then, you know, there's nothing as big as that. And so I think if we start from the cross, then anything is possible. Otherwise, it's easy to get angry and to stay bitter, and that's just, it's just not the heart of God. It's just not healthy at all.
And, you know, we on this show, we've dealt with a lot of women that were molested as children and raped. And we had some people come on and just admit it. I can't forgive him for doing that. I was a little girl. Or I was a little boy and this happened. They took advantage of me. And they're holding on to that thing. And I believe that tool of forgiveness is a powerful thing. But if you don't have love, you can't have forgiveness, because those two, they go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
There's just no way that you can forgive without love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And forgiveness is hard, but I think the most important thing is to remember is that when you hold on to something, you're the one that's more hurt by it than anything else. Often people go on with their lives and they've forgotten all about what they did to us. And so holding on to hurt and bitterness can only damage us, and it can only keep us from healing and being strong and being the best people that we can be. So, yeah.
Yes.
You know, Dee, I was talking to, I believe it was my brother. Yeah, I was talking to my brother today, and we were talking about a particular person who he kept saying, that person is just evil and that person is filled with hate and nothing's going to change that person. They've always been mad and upset and they just hateful. And so I asked him, I said, well, what's the opposite of hate? And immediately he said, well, love. I said, no, because if it's opposite, it has to be an equal. I said, hate can't be equal to love, because love can conquer hate. But hate can't conquer love.
Yeah, very true.
You know, and so when Greg said earlier that, you know, you have to operate in love, you know, there's so many people out here that are just filled with anger and filled with despair because nobody has taught them how to operate in love.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
What do you consider operating in love? If you had to paint a picture of what operating in love was, what would it look like?
I think the best picture is Jesus Christ on the cross, honestly. I mean, beaten beyond recognition for the sake of love and for the sake of redemption, for the fact that we were separated from him, separated from God, and he was willing to do whatever it was to get us back in relationship. And so, you know, in the book of Hebrews 12, he says, you know, whatever you're going through, you have not suffered to the point of death on the cross. And so to me, anything short of that is, you know, you haven't done enough yet. So when you can get to that point, and not only that, but to say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, that's insane. I mean, gosh, that to me is the epitome of love, to have someone kill you for no reason, for you to take it for the purpose of saving that person that's killing you for no reason, and then to say, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. That is love personified. Jesus Christ is love personified. And so I think us striving to be recreated in the image of Christ and to function and to do exactly what Christ would do in any situation, that's how we can be assured that we're going to walk in love. And it's not something that we can do in our human power. It's something that we can only do through his spirit and through his strength, because we just don't have that in us. You know, if we're not allowing him to love through us, I don't think we can forgive, and I don't think we can let go of things that happen to us.
You know, Sherry, I want to ask you this. Do you think the people that hung you on the cross, the people that hurt you, the people that left you for dead a long time ago, do you really believe that these people knew who you were? I mean, did these people really know who Sherry Lewis belonged to? Did they really think that they could keep her down? Did they think that they could just beat her and just leave her where she is? Do you think these people really understood and knew who you were and who you are?
That's a great question. God, I'd have to say that for the most part, I've had a beautiful life, and so there's not like a very long list of people that I can look at and say they did that to me. I mean, there's basically two. And I don't know. I don't know that I knew who I was at the time, you know? So I doubt it. I really, really doubt it. Yeah.
Mm.
Sherry, I have a question from someone in the chat room. They want to know, how does operating in love relate to destiny?
Oh, it's everything. I don't think we can get to our full destiny unless we're operating in love. And I think the first person that we have to operate in love with towards is ourselves. And it's not until we're fully able to love ourselves like God loves us and to see ourselves like God loves us that we're able to pursue destiny with passion, because we're so bound up by so many things that have happened in our life as we've lived. And so the first thing that has to happen is we have to love ourselves and to love ourselves like God loves us before we can even begin to pursue purpose and destiny. And then we have to love anyone and everyone that's ever hurt us, because bitterness and anger and unforgiveness will always hold us back. It'll never, we'll never get to where we're supposed to be holding on to stuff. It's like weights that just drag us down and keep us from getting there. So walking in love and walking in forgiveness and releasing old stuff is just the most important thing that we can do to get where we're trying to go.
Mm.
That's powerful. That's powerful. You know, it's hard, like the person in the chat room said, it is hard to love someone that hurt you.
Yeah.
It's hard to sit there and see that person. You know, you want to operate in love, but that person is being evil and ugly, and they continue to do things against you, and yet we're telling you, love them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a big pill to swallow. And I think
I think that
in our favorite book, I believe that that's what they're talking about, that we must die daily.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes death. It really takes death. It really does. And it's not an easy thing to do. But when you realize that you come out on the other side looking like Christ, smelling like Christ, acting like Christ, it's a worthwhile sacrifice. It's a worthwhile thing to do.
So if someone wanted to get in contact with you to get your book and for speaking engagements, we know that you reach out to so many people in the prisons, women that are going through divorces, just, you know, what I tell you, give us some of your speaking topics that you have when you do go out and speak.
Definitely divorce and healing and being restored to life after divorce. Destiny and reaching out for purpose and destiny, inner healing and just getting over the pain and wounds of the past, singleness and how to live successfully single, and anything that – my main thing is destiny, purpose and destiny, and helping people to become who they're called to be and to be what they're called to be.
Yeah, so how would they get in contact with you? Do they just go to your website, or do you have
a
public
website? Yeah, it's www.sherrylewis, SHERRILEWIS.com. And then my publicist is Dee Stewart, and her on my website as well.
Okay.
Yes, and Dee has actually been in the chat room chatting with us all day.
Okay.
All
cool.
Evening, rather. So, hi, Dee. I know you can hear us. All right. I just want to close out by saying inner strength.
Mm.
It's easy for people to say, oh, just pull from within. You can do it. You got it inside of you. But it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do when you're under pressure.
You know,
but you have to definitely find the strength, and it's in there.
Yeah.
Everything that you were supposed to have has already been put in you. It was in you from birth. And the word educate means to pull from within.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already been educated from birth. Now you just have to discover those pieces and points of knowledge. Pull them out and use them.
Absolutely.
You have to use them.
Absolutely.
You know, and that will build your strength. You know, it's like a muscle. It's not going to look good. It's not going to work unless you use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I stress that so much, because that's the one thing. There's so much knowledge in the world. Knowledge is at your fingertips. You can Google just about anything. You can Google. You know? And so there's nothing that's not there for you to, you know, you have the ability to touch and see everything. Reach for it. Go after it. Find your destiny. Work in your destiny. Dance in your destiny. Live in your destiny. With that being said, you've been listening to the Abundant Solutions Hour. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you come back on Wednesday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Blog Talk Radio. and join us again. We'll have another awesome and wonderful show. We thank you so much, Sherry, for joining us. Go out, buy the book. Go to sherrylewis.com. Buy the book. Check her out. Dance into Destiny, Sherry L. Lewis. That being said, we thank you. We believe we've reached our goal of helping others be more, do more, and have more. Good evening, and God bless.
Thanks, folks, for making this little gathering of ours so extra magical. And from our family and friends to yours, may all your wishes come true. So long.
Starlight, star bright, first star I see.